When you hear a rustling outside your tent, do you secretly hope it's Bigfoot?
Do you have theories about the fate of D.B. Cooper and why the Northwest seems to have so many serial killers?
So many. Do you like shows where two longtime BFFs tell you about cool stories and legends?
Well, step right up then, because we've got ghosts, we've got bootleggers, we've got cryptids, witches, curses, hoaxes, princesses, and all other manner of reality that is stranger than fiction.
Ouijabrods is a show about stories from the Pacific Northwest. You can join us at ouijabrods.podbean.com or just ouijabrods.com. We release every Monday, and our advice to you is to live weird,
die weird,
and stay weird.
Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry McStay, and each week I, my co-host and our guest, propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. The Clash sang, "I fought the law and the law won." Coincidentally, I also fought the law, specifically the 1985 Weights and Measures Act, and it didn't so much as win as I gave it a walkover by tripping over the ropes on the way into the ring and knocking myself out on the referee's shoes. And while I was there, bleeding profusely into the canvas, the law did several laps of honour around my body, spitting on me repeatedly and casting aspersions on the virtue of my mum. And those are now a series of hilarious yet tragic gifts. And the law is scheduled to fight Conor McGregor in Vegas next month. Meanwhile, let me introduce my very own legal expert, the compass to my mentis, the caveat to my emptor, and the loco to my parentis. It's Ben Vandeveld.
Hello, I thought you were going to say the loco to my down in Acapulco, which is exactly...
the loco to my motion.
Yeah, those are the two legal defences I would go for.
It's a fun episode this week.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We'll tell you right away, it is about the world's worst legal defence. I'm glad you all...
It's Liverpool's currently.
I don't know, is there anything legal about what they do?
Not really. I mean, we don't break many rules, but we don't stop many goals either.
No, that's true. Have you ever broken the law?
That's a good question, actually. I hadn't thought about that. Have I broken... I mean, I've been in African countries where it's illegal to be gay. Does that count?
Wow. I mean, this is an interesting, if really miserable, legal point.
Yeah.
Like... by being there, are you breaking the law?
I don't know, I wasn't bumming anyone at the time, so...
Yeah, my friend from...
I wasn't caught in flagrante delicto at any point, so...
Ah, yeah, that sounds far dirtier.
I think I've probably taken a handful of penny sweets in a shop when I was a kid and everyone else was doing it and I thought I was being cool.
Oh, yeah, oh, I've shoplifted a finger of fudge.
You! When?
When I was like 8.
Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah.
No, I think the statute of limitations has passed.
Yeah, I'm probably right with that. Oh, and I've also taken an awful lot of illegal drugs.
I know, that's no surprise to anyone who listens to the show.
But that doesn't... No, but I'm not being caught. Yeah.
It's only because somebody hasn't... I realise as I'm saying this, someone will send a copy of this episode to their local police force.
No, but it's really weird that, like, because there's so, like, I, you know, on Radio 4 now, there's enough people who can just happily talk about taking drugs because we live in a sensible liberal society where you can go, yeah, it's probably no harm to people apart from the mules.
Bigger fish to fry.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, delicious seasoned fish.
I never have that for my munchies.
Have you had a hash pollock in your time?
No, but I believe he played third slip for South Africa in the 1960s.
Very good. Bravo. Bravo, bravo.
Thanks, pal. Right, we should introduce our guest. She is yet another multi-talented guest on this show. She is a stand-up, an actress, a writer, and a cabaret performer. She's performed at very many Edinburgh festivals, including her awards-nominated show, The School of Reason, which ended up as a BBC Radio 4 show. She has... had one of her jokes entered in Dave's top 10 gags. She's just opened up her phone, and I'm worried she's now checking this against her Wikipedia entry. She's also written for the Lady Boys of Bangkok, but it is not in these capacities that she is here expressly, because she also is one of our highest qualified guests. She has a BSc in experimental pathology, an MSc in forensic science, a PhD in viral bioinformatics, and worked for many years as an IT investigator for the Serious Fraud Office. And I hope I've got this right, because otherwise she will accuse me of fraudulently talking about her CV.
That's a whole lot of alphabet after her name.
Yeah, there's a hell of a lot of alphabet. Luckily, there's not that many letters in her name, which make up for it. It's Rialina.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I feel like telling you that's the other Rialina that you've just looked up.
Oh, shit.
There's so many of us.
It's like John Smith.
It honestly is. It's tricky when I go on stage. Hello.
Hello.
You're well.
I am well,
thank you.
Have
you ever broken the law?
Yeah.
What do you do?
What's your favourite time you've broken the law?
I'm just wondering, I was just looking, when you said I got my phone, I was looking at the statute of limitations on it. Can I say this out loud? I don't know, it's one of those, it's grey lines between the law. I think we've all done little things like turn on our homework late and lie about it, which is not the law per se, but I was quite proud of that one because I hadn't finished the essay and I told my English teacher, I definitely turned it in, and she's like, I don't have it. And then I finished it over the weekend and then slipped it into her folders in another class and then waited. And then about a couple of days later, she said, I'm so sorry, you did turn it in. I found it in another paper. And I was like, wow. Oh, thank you very much. I know,
that's
awful.
Amazing.
Awful,
so
I know.
You've broken moral laws.
Moral laws. And then I also...
Take one of those letters off her surname.
Yeah. Take the H.
If you did murder someone, this is...
Okay.
If you were to murder someone, how would you do it?
There's realistically and then there's technically. Because, of course, in a forensic degree, this comes up.
Yeah.
This comes up.
I imagine this is, like, first day of class.
Yes. So, if you want to do it where there's reasonable doubt, push them off a high building.
Yeah.
Because did they fall? Did they jump? That kind of thing. Cool. Obviously, you can't do a Sherlock Holmes and be the only two people on the roof.
Yeah.
Or you need to have a way of not being there. But that's one way of...
On like a floor below with a really long stick.
Yeah.
And pull. Something like that. But remember that if you push someone too hard, then that is going to create bruising on the back, so they can find that on the back. So you can't just go with two hands and push them off. But
it's like a long stick.
If we're talking realistically, like in society as it works today... Currently, you hit them with the car because we don't have laws that put people in jail forever for if you kill someone in a car. I think it's max 7 years. It's ridiculous.
Is that voluntary manslaughter?
It's ridiculous. Yeah, well, it's just dangerous driving or death by dangerous driving, but the law does not, for whatever reason, put you in jail for life if you kill someone in a vehicle.
Yeah. Interesting.
I mean, you have to still make it look like an accident. If you ram into them, then they'll have motive and go, no, that was murder.
Yeah.
She came straight for her. But if you sideswipe them and whoops, then...
All right, Ben.
Right. Challenge accepted.
I mean, that's not the most creative way to kill someone.
It doesn't have the style of sort of like a South American tree frog's poison, which is undetectable and all that sort of stuff. An Agatha Christie style-y one.
It depends on the person as well. Like, if you want to try and kill a smoker, liquid nicotine is lethal on the skin.
Yeah.
So... You do
people
that.
Obviously go, oh, well, they've got nicotine on their body. They're a smoker.
Oh, that's dark. That's
so
really
it really depends. Like, if you're going to push someone off a building, they should be depressed beforehand. You know, there has to be a history of mental.
Yeah.
So you got it. Every death is per person.
Yeah. You've got a personal...
Let me get my files out on you guys.
It's a personal touch. All right, Ben, how would you kill me?
Like, Ben's
it's,
Jewish.
We're 40-odd episodes in.
Oh, wow.
Wow, how...
When we get to episode 50.
I know for a fact he'd feed your body to gay pigs.
Yeah. This is true.
Yeah, Adam, that was something we said before the podcast,
yeah.
Which
oh,
is
sorry.
Baffling.
Whoops. Yeah.
Oh.
Now you'll have
we'll
to
leave it in and let
bit.
The audience
yeah.
go, have to listen back and go, hang on, what's that a callback to? Yeah.
How different would the Caribbean have been if it was
the
Battle
of
the Gay Pigs?
Pigs.
Yeah. The Gay of Pigs. Yeah. Or the Battle of Gay Pigs. Either way, I'm loving that.
The Gay of Pigs fiasco.
That would be a party.
That would be one hell of a party.
One heck of a party. Good
cigars.
Gay FK.
Sorry, that's just silly. That's amazing alternative history. Yeah.
That's a Saturday Night Live sketch waiting to be written.
Yeah, I think probably I would find a way of having you lead the inaugural Nigerian Pride carnival.
I'm pretty sure they've had one.
Wow.
Ugandan Pride might be. They don't smile upon our type.
They do not smile upon your type. Either that or no, I know what I'd do. I'd write a play and have you star in the lead part of it and have it that your character has to get shot. And then they would I make sure there'd be a mix up with the guns so that you were actually and actually no, I would write it in the play that there was a bullet catch trick. And that you were playing, I forgot the name of the bullet catch guy from our Magician's Expert episode. And that the in the play it's written that the bullet catch has to go wrong, but it actually goes wrong and you die that way.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then you'd hire someone you really didn't like to be the stage manager so that they get sort of
their fingerprints are on the actual bullet. Because you have to actually get a bullet and then make sure that it's in the right place at the right time after the check has been done.
There's a lot of admin.
Yeah, there is an awful lot of admin
and
in there.
And bullets have tiny little ridges in them because you know you have to pack it and then you put the end in, which means that there's a ridge that DNA can get stuck under. So you have to never handle that bullet at all or breathe on it so that there's none of your DNA on it.
That's exactly what I thought about it.
I bet you did.
And then what I'd do is that I would kill myself and bury myself in 6 or 7 different graves that other people would have to find as the ultimate alibi.
Interesting.
Like a massive game of chonka.
What's chonka?
Chonka is that game with the shells and you get like a board with 14 holes in it and you pick up the seeds and you distribute them one at a time in all the holes and then wherever you end, if there's a pile of shells in there, you pick it up and you keep going.
And then when
you end up with one in an empty hole,
then
you have to stop and the other person goes. And at either end, you have a home and you're just trying to get as many seeds in your own home.
Oh,
as
so it's chonka for cannibals.
Yes, essentially.
So how would you kill me?
You do a lot of driving.
Yep.
Like long distances to gigs and things like that.
Uh-huh.
So I think, I mean, it's classic, but I would just tamper with your car. I think it would be one of those, Ben, can you give me a lift to such and such a place? You're going a long distance. I would then be left by him, and he's going back to London, and I could just have tampered with the car. So I know he'd be driving over.
Yeah, but you would have been the last person in the car. You would be the first suspect because they'd be like, "Hang on, he drove all the way there with him, then he left him, and then the car screwed up."
This is the crime. You see, I'm admitting it now on a podcast. It seems too easy for me to be the killer. Having said on a podcast that this is how I would kill him, and then it would happen. They'd just go, no, someone else has heard this, they're going to frame me, and that would be my defense the whole way along. Now I've done this episode, someone else has heard this, and they're trying to put me in for the crime I never committed.
The thing is that you're thinking way too much non-scientifically, because you've got to remember that it's physical evidence is king, and the physical evidence puts you in that car, not the person listening to the podcast. So regardless of the fact that you've now explained as well that it couldn't be me, I did a podcast.
Yeah, that bit.
They're
going
to point to that evidence that he's thought this through, premeditation. That ups you to murder one.
I would
recommend that you tamper with one of the trucks on either side of his car.
Which is why, ultimately, I'm just going to shoot you, Ben.
Oh, fair enough.
This has all been a bluff.
Yeah. Best way to tamper with a truck, stick a drunk guy in the...
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go off and destroy this script of the life and untimely death of Barry McStay. Now, we have to ask, Rhea, we always ask our guests, what are you worst at in the world?
Yes, no, I had, I had to think about this, because obviously we tend to think about what we're good at and then think that we're better than we are at it, which is probably one of my biggest flaws. So I think that what I'm worst at is working in an office. I've realized that I'm worse at authority. I'm awful with authority.
As in having it or taking instruction from it?
Taking instruction from it.
But like low-level authority, like office-level authority
just,
stuff.
Yes, just any hierarchy.
Yeah.
I'm immediately... So it's me and my sister are polar opposites. She's been working in a bank for over 10 years and doesn't progress very far because she's like, I like where I am. I like it at the bottom. I don't have to manage anybody else. I just get on with my work. I get my massive paycheck and I go on holiday, right? And she's there. And whenever I go into a place, I'm going, who's in charge?
Why are you in charge? You look a bit stupid. Why are you doing it that way? Let me show you how to do this. And there's four levels in between us just going, excuse me, you report to me. And I'm going, I am so much more highly qualified than you. You really don't want me to report to you. In fact, the last time I was working in office, I got swapped around. Like, I just kept getting different managers, line managers, because they just go going, I can't deal with her. And the last one said to me, Rhea, you tend to create a vortex around you and the rest of us get sucked in whether we like it or not.
Wow.
Yeah, so like just a whirlwind in the office, just going, you know.
Holy shit, Rhea would murder people using her vortex.
That is my special skill, yeah. That is it comes with a suit and everything. Big V on the front.
Hey man,
vortex.
My special suit's got a big V on the front.
For?
Vanderveld.
Oh, really? You have three letter options and you're getting upset about one of them? I have... one choice,
yeah,
vortex.
But I can't put VD on my suit. It's terrible.
Well, yeah, but isn't it VDV?
Yeah.
Which then makes people just go, has he got DVD the wrong way? Yeah.
What does it mean he's got...
Vidiva, man.
Vidiva.
Yeah, or has he got...
Vidiva. It sounds like someone falling downstairs.
Yeah.
It's the boy who can't start a lawnmower, boy.
Can I point out, by the way, so mentioning special suits, so we are wearing the same jumper.
Yeah,
Ben,
we are.
We're slowly morphing into the same people.
You are wearing the same jumper.
Yeah, that's because after I've killed you, I'm going to Talented Mr. Ripley you.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Can I just say, you two thought a lot about killing each other specifically. I just spoke generally about killing people generally. I didn't have a specific term.
I'm now imagining some sort of house fire where you're, like, your hair is the first thing to go up. Ben also spends a lot of time just alone in his flat, and as listeners to the show will know, he's managed to injure himself being alone in his flat on several occasions.
I've never set fire to my hair.
Yet.
Have you almost strangled yourself with a belt while alone in your flat?
No.
No? Okay. Just checking.
What, like...
Not while alone.
You know what I'm... He has no idea what I'm referring to.
I know exactly what you're referring
Michael
to.
Michael Hutchins. No! Heavens! No! Who is the guy from Monkey? The white guy that did the kung fu and everyone's like, oh, so zen.
David Carradine.
Right. I was referring to that kind of thing.
They're fairly similar.
No, because Michael Hutchinson committed suicide and David Carradine was pleasuring himself in a cupboard.
No, but Michael Hutchins was also into Stranglewanks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what they're called.
Michael Hutchinson and the Stranglewanks.
And the Stranglewanks.
That's a latter day incarnation of INXS.
Although, obviously, the higher level of that is to make it a danger Stranglewank, where you start jacking off with a belt around your neck, and then you call out for your mum. Sorry, you call out for your mum whilst your mum is downstairs. You don't just call out for your mum.
You really took that to a different level by making the child still live at home.
No,
like
that,
making it a child.
But that's what a danger wank is.
No, I get what a danger wank is, but a strangle wank, I always sort of keep more towards the adult end of, you know, in my head, it's only adults.
The thing is, though, Rhea, like, more people are living at home older and older these days.
Well, that is true. So. That is true.
Yeah, it's
why not call for your dad then? I mean,
you need to have a really well-enforced railing in your wardrobe, though, don't you, to be able to do that sort of stuff? IKEA wardrobes would collapse if you try and hang yourself off
one of
those. That's, in fairness, IKEA are now carrying out a public service by making flimsy furniture because they're decreasing the amount of death by strangle wank.
Which is definitely
what I want on my death certificate.
Which is really difficult for IKEA because there's a certain kind of wardrobe called the strangle wanker.
Time of death, 7:49. Cause of death? Death by strangle wank.
That I really want to make.
Hair strangle wank is the villain in my new graphic novel.
That sounds amazing. I really want to make a cocktail called the Death by Strangle Wank. It's got like just a vine wrapped around the outside of the glass and it's full of baby Amazonian tree frog venom.
It has to be strong enough that it takes your breath away.
Lovely.
We are going to discuss this week the world's worst legal defense with one of the greatest legal minds in the country, unable to be here. We do have Rhea, though.
Yes.
And Ben is going to start us off, Ben.
Right, yeah. There's settle in. There's a lot of shit to get through.
Oh my god, first thing you nearly said to each other when Ben arrived this morning was this was so much fun to research.
Yeah.
This was great. Because sometimes when we research, we've got like really dig around, whereas there was so much shit going on. First of all, do you guys know what the Twinkie defense is?
Yes. Yeah.
No.
So, Dan...
It's American, isn't it?
It is American. Okay. So, Dan White, who was the fireman who shot Harvey Milk, the... Mm-hmm. Which I know, I forget what position
he was in. He's now got an airport named after him?
Does he?
Oh, maybe he does, doesn't he? Does he?
What, MILK Airport?
No, yeah. Did I know? Am I wrong?
Harvey Milk was obviously a gay rights campaigner.
And city councillor.
And city councillor, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And Dan White was former city supervisor who lost his job and shot him. And the mayor.
Yes,
the
mayor,
George Moscone as well.
So basically... The one of the defences that the council put forward is that he should be charged with diminished capacity because he was suffering from depression and that affected his decision making.
Yeah.
One of the pieces of evidence they used was that his diet had become less healthy and he was eating Twinkies. And basically, the press reported it the wrong way round. The press reported it and it became infamous as the Twinkie defence, saying that he ate Twinkies, which made him depressed, which made him kill Harvey Milk.
Yeah.
Actually, it's the other way round. The eating of Twinkies was apparently symptomatic of his depression.
And also, apparently, they didn't actually specifically mention Twinkies. They said, oh, he was eating junk food and drinking fizzy drinks. And a member of the press sort of coined the idea of the Twinkie defence, sort of suggesting it was one of the foods he would eat. But yeah, it became really famous. And now it's sort of used as one of those, like, derisory terms for a legal defence that's a bit crap.
Yeah.
Right, in America, they say,
it's one of those Twinkie defences.
And then also, depressingly, in particularly in the States, there it also means you can have there's a particular type of defence, which is the sort of... the homosexual panic defense
gay
or the
panic,
gay
yeah.
panic defense, which I never read about, but basically if you are so emotionally distressed by the thought of someone of the same sex coming on to you and you then kill them, that is apparently a potentially good defense.
Yeah, I have some stuff about that. Do you want to
yeah, go for
That's
it.
That's awful. By the way, just to say, they've been wanting to rename San Francisco Airport the Harvey Milk Airport, and this came out like 4 or 5 years ago, but there were a lot of death threats, apparently. So they've delayed that, but I think it's being brought up again.
Great. Good, that's exactly how he'd want to be remembered.
As an airport?
Well, with death threats.
Better than Twinkie defense.
Yeah.
Oh, the Twinkie dude, yeah.
The Twinkie fence is going to be around the airport. yeah, a couple of the gay panic defenses. It's banned in a couple of states in America. I think in California and in Illinois. But it's sort of one of those diminished capacity things that someone flies into a rage at gay, at homosexual advances. In a defense, a guy called Joseph Rodriguez in 1965, he beat an old man. Rodriguez was having a piss in an alleyway and an old guy came up behind him and put his arm on him. And his defense was that he was afraid it was a homosexual advance and he beat him to death. And he was convicted of second-degree murder. This defense often doesn't work.
Dude.
All right, so
but it sometimes
the
leads to slightly lower, not first-degree, but second-degree.
So it ameliorates.
Yeah, slightly. Mm. Matthew Shepard's murder, obviously, which is the subject of the Laramie Project. In fact, it's just yesterday, I think it was 19 years since Matthew Shepard was murdered. He was a young gay man, was murdered in 1998 in Wyoming. And the guys who attacked him beat him to death. They said his gay propositions had made them so angry they attacked him. And
did they get off? Or
no,
they good.
Didn't, yeah. The judge ruled that the defense was not permissible in Wyoming because it was basically a diminished capacity defense that wasn't acceptable to Wyoming law. And maybe it's not funny, but one of the more interesting occasions of the gay panic defense was a guy called Jonathan Schmitz killed a friend of his, Scott Amadeur. After the latter guy, he confessed his crush and fantasies about Schmitz on a TV program on the Jenny Jones Show in 1995.
Oh my gosh.
And so Schmitz had been brought on, told, like, a friend of yours has a crush on you. And he was like, okay, he was curious to know who this person was. He knew he had a secret admirer, wasn't sure who it was. And then was brought out to discover it was this guy. And he didn't kill him until 3 days after the recording. So the impact of it being a panic defence was greatly diminished because it wasn't an immediate reaction. But he was convicted of second-degree murder. And was...
I don't mean to defend him, but if you think that some girl likes you,
yeah,
and you're hoping I could get lucky here, and you walk out on television to find out it's a guy, it can take time to process that.
Yeah, I can imagine so.
I mean, I'm not saying he is in any way right to kill him.
Yeah.
But...
one of the things I read about it suggested that they went for drinks after the show and may have hooked up.
That's it.
Which is it. Again, not sure.
But that makes sense, doesn't it? Is that he couldn't handle?
Well, apparently he took it reasonably well, and the guy Amadeur was sort of continued to sort of chat and be nice to him in the ensuing days, and then eventually ended up snapping, kill him. He was got 25 to 50 years, but he was paroled in August this year.
Oh, congratulations to him.
It used to be called the Portsmouth or Guardsman Defence, by the way, in British law. Portsmouth, the gay panic defence. It was called the Portsmouth Defence or the Guardsman Defence.
Tell me why.
I think it's a Navy reference, the Portsmouth Defence. I think there was a TV play called the Portsmouth Defence in the 60s about this very idea. And I think the Guardsman Defence is referenced in an episode of Rumpole of the Bailey. Now you've got the perfect defence, though, for when you do murder me. You've got the gay panic defence.
Just a real slow burn panic.
Like, I was in such a panic, I wrote a play, hired a cast and crew.
One of the other diminished capacity defences that I found was about the San Ysidro Massacre.
We're reading a lot of the same articles.
Oh, we are. A chap called James Huberty, he killed 21 people, and his wife, Etna, claimed that the massacre was because of his poor diet. Partially because he worked somewhere where there was lead and cadmium, but also she claimed that too much MSG and McDonald's had caused him to then do this massacre in a McDonald's.
Yeah, and it was in 1984 in San Diego.
Because it tasted too good. Like, that's all MSG is this flavor enhancer.
Yeah.
And people go, I have a headache, it hurts my brain, or whatever. Some people say, but monosodium glutamate is glutamate with one sodium, hence the name. And the glutamate that we normally have in our bodies is disodium. So it has two sodiums on it.
Yeah.
So, like, that their whole defense rested on one sodium molecule. They're just, that's the whole thing, which is like, damn, that one extra sodium. Going, well, you got it from all the other shite.
For want of a sodium, the massacre was lost.
And he did it in a McDonald's. Why is his wife defending him? Like, why are we talking to the wife? Like,
because love knows no bounds.
I think she tried to sue, his workplace and McDonald's.
Of course she sued McDonald's for making her husband kill people. Of course it's their fault.
Yeah, I'd love.
I bet the coffee was too hot.
Yeah, that too. I really hope that they had Ronald McDonald in the dock on trial. I say to you, Mr. McDonald.
Wasn't me. Next up, I call. Next up, the Hamburglar.
I was in terms of fast food, I was reading some really interesting cases about people who tried to get money out of large either fast food companies or soft drink companies by claiming they found something in their food, right? Mm-hmm. So it's easier if you find a cockroach in your hamburger because they've just made the hamburger, but people have gone in and said, I found a mouse in my Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
But the problem is that from the time that they make it to can it to you getting it, it's like 50 months, and somebody just easily pointed out that mouse wasn't born when that can was made. Like, it's not, mice live for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
We can prove that that's been around longer, but that's what the lawyers came up with their expert witnesses. But the company itself stood there and just went, excuse me, if a mouse was in Nevada, was in Mountain Dew for 50 months, it would be just a sludge at the bottom. You wouldn't recognize it as a mouse. We can prove it to you. We can put a mouse in Mountain Dew and show you what happens to it over time. And they just went, you don't have to. The mouse is too young. It's fine.
I saw that story as well, and I watched a grim video this morning of someone going, let's find out whether that's true. And they got a little jar, poured some Mountain Dew in, got a dead rat from a pet shop that they used to feed snakes, popped it in there for 35 days, and there wasn't much mouse left at the end of 35 days, which really puts me off drinking Mountain Dew, to be perfectly honest.
Especially because he put a rat in there.
This is one of those things I saw on the news when I was younger in Ireland. I think it was in a Supermax, so a fast food restaurant in Ireland. There was like...
Is that like a mega McDonald's, a Supermax?
Yeah, no, it's very much like a lesser McDonald's.
Mecca!
There's definitely someone who tried to sue them for like having a wet floor in the bathroom and slipping on the floor, and they didn't have a sign up or anything. And then they just show...
They're the ones who pissed on the floor and that's why it was wet.
Even better. The CCTV footage from the bathroom shows them turning the sink on, splashing water out of the sink onto the floor, and then doing a whole thing where they like deliberately did the walks. They could like leave a streak on the thing and fall over. So it was one of the shortest.
And he did not countersue for the fact that there's CCTV in the bathroom?
I think turned away from the urinals.
Oh, yeah, that's all right then.
Yeah, it wasn't fine. It's not like right in the bottom of the plug hole.
Yeah. It wasn't like Chuck Berry's bathrooms.
Worm's eye view.
Yeah.
I did briefly look up to like some famous lawyers and like tricks that they would pull in court. So the my favourite one, there's a trick that has been attributed to either Earl Rogers, who was an early 20th century guy, or Clarence Darrow.
Oh yeah.
What they did, particularly if they thought that their the person they were defending didn't have much of a chance, they would light up a cigar and smoke it whilst their opposing lawyer was giving their closing statement. And they would smoke it and smoke it and smoke it, and the ash on the cigar would get longer and longer and longer, and the jury would all over time become waiting for the ash to drop. And what they'd done is they'd stuck a wire through the cigar that would hold the ash in place. It's brilliant, isn't it? And apparently, on occasion, this had got people off.
Wow.
Because
they weren't listening to
they weren't listening properly to the arguments.
Distraction techniques.
Yeah, it's an incredible distraction technique.
Can I tell you the world's best defense?
Go for it.
All right, so the words, this is, I found this actually, and don't feel bad, I love you guys, but I found this researching another podcast. and it was a lawyer in
We don't mind that you do it, we're sad that you've told us.
I'm so sorry. I just needed to say that for all the people that follow me and go, you mentioned it already.
Yeah.
He is like the Nigel Farage of 1800s American politics. Like, he just kept trying to run and kept trying to be somebody, and people just kept going, we don't want you, and not electing him, and then he'd have to go to Canada and come back and try again.
All right, I thought you meant like a racist in American 19th century politics, and that does not narrow it down.
Right, I'll be honestly, it, probably. But, so he was a lawyer, and
what's his name?
His name is Clement Laird Vallandigham.
Wow.
How did that not last as a name? Vallandigham. I'll tell you why. Because he was defending someone for murder. Mm-hmm. Right? He was defending someone for murder, and his defense was that it was possible that the victim shot himself. Right? That was his defense. It was a rifle, and he said, look, you can shoot yourself with a rifle. And in order to prove it, he demonstrated it. It was still loaded, and he killed himself. Thereby providing the best reasonable doubt for his client ever. So that's the best.
Did the client
best
get off?
The client got off. Oh, of course he did. Wow. Because he demonstrated without a doubt that the victim could have shot himself with that gun.
That's amazing.
That's banging. I love that.
But he is our lawyer. He's our podcast lawyer.
He's your guy. He's your guy. Vallandigham.
Damn right. Right, I've got one more thing to tell you about before we go down a really fun wiki hole that I ended up going down. I want to briefly mention someone like Mr. Sampson, who is a legal defence, and their client was being accused of driving without a licence and littering, like fairly low level stuff.
At the same time?
Maybe you could be like, throwing stuff out the window. Yeah.
Probably his licence.
That lawyer clearly woke up on the wrong side of bed that morning, because within 30 seconds, he'd been indicted for 5 separate felonies for doing throat-slashing gestures towards the judge, the jury, a cop, another prosecutor, and then making a shooting gesture at another cop in court.
With fingers. Okay.
Wow.
So they're going to mention. Also, a brief mention.
Accuse you of mime.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, that's definitely 30 years without parole.
I imprison you in this glass cage for 30 years.
The best punishment for mime is from Terry Pratchett, where Lord Vetinari, the ruler of Ankh-Morpork, would imprison all mimes and hang them upside down in a dungeon opposite a sign that just said, learn the words. One of the person who gets an honourable mention is a guy called Jean R. Morrill, who was someone who would molest young boys, and in all of like a lot of cases involving paedophilia, there would be the suggestion that he had been molested as a young boy, which was used to explain his actions. Mm-hmm. However, unusually in this case, the person that Jean said molested him was Bigfoot.
Right.
And that was his claim, that he had been so traumatised by being molested by Bigfoot, and I presume also Big Hands, that it caused him to act in this appalling way.
Did he clarify whether Big Feet really means...
Ronald McDonald. There was a guy in the news this week in America who was arrested for... Oh, oh god, drunk driving or something like that, but he said that he was actually a time traveler come back from the future to warn us about an alien invasion that's going to happen next year.
Oh my god, is he the same guy who's been going on about Nibiru for the past few weeks?
It's probably one of our Nibiru truthers. Yeah,
but I want to take you down a hole that starts with a Welsh gentleman called Leon Humphreys. Leon Humphreys is a mechanic, and in 2002 he had to pay a £25 parking fine. He didn't want to pay it, so the Vehicle Licensing Authority in the United Kingdom took him to court, and he decided that his defence was that he would challenge them to trial by combat.
Oh, no.
And he said that the Vehicle Licensing Authority had to nominate a hero, and he would take them on using one of his collection of samurai swords, Gurkha knives, or heavy hammers.
Is that still a thing? Trial by combat?
No, it's not. No.
Wait, what year was this?
2002.
Oh!
And basically, the court went, don't be a dick, £200 fine and £100 costs. But I started to look up trial by combat. So there are various examples of this. In Viking lore, it was something called Holmgang. In the...
Beautiful word.
And basically, you would... It was particularly in that one, reputational. If someone... offended your reputation as either a man or a soldier, you would fight within a stone circle and fight until someone was either...
That's how you should do it, in a stone circle.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There were land disputes in both Norman kingdoms and Frank kingdoms. You would get some of the land that was disputed, pop it in the middle of the battle area. You would both touch your swords to the land and then fight. And
you mean like a handful of dirt?
Like a handful of dirt, but it's symbolic. Symbolic dirt.
Yeah, symbolic.
And the whole point of things like trial by combat is that, you know, whoever won, well, that would be ordained by God, and therefore that was your defence.
Because I'll be honest, if someone just said, here's the land we're fighting over, and it fit inside the stone circle, I'd be like, you know what, you haven't made it. Take it. But I want to be ordained by God. It's like, yeah, well, we can't have it all, right? You keep the land.
Trial by combat, we're not sure when it was last done in the United Kingdom. It varies between the 15th, 16th, 17th century. There's a recording of it in 1446 where a servant accused a master of treason. The master went, how dare you, trial by combat. He then turned up to the trial by combat drunk and was promptly killed by the servant.
By the servant?
Yeah. If you...
Like by mistake or on purpose?
No, on purpose.
Oh, okay. Just by the... Okay.
But he was so cocky that he turned up drunk. The way a lot of it would work is you would with the trial by combat, you turn up, you would have to swear an oath not to use witchcraft or sorcery in the trial by combat, because that was obviously against the rules. And then if you were defeated but remained alive, then you are hung. The way that you would be able to defend yourself in the trial by combat is if you stayed alive all the way till sunset, then you got off. So basically, it's filibustering.
Yeah.
By sword. Yeah, filibustering by sword. And but fun little linguistic thing that I found is that the way that you would surrender is you would declare yourself craven. And craven literally means, I am vanquished. And that would mean that your name would be mud, you'd be declared infamous, you would have to pay damages, and you would not be allowed to become a free man, ever.
Wow.
But you would...
What do you mean by free man?
Like a freeman of the city is something that you would not be allowed to...
Oh, okay, like a mason.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, no, not a mason, like freeman of the city gives you certain rights and privileges that certain august citizens get.
Oh, okay.
And that is a privilege that would be withdrawn...
Okay.
For you.
Nice.
Okay.
So I thought trial by combat
Wait a minute. So you either die or become craven. Like your choices are...
Or you win.
This sucks. As a
defence, yeah. Or you win by playing the long game. Well, no, it only sucks if you're shit at fighting. If you're a 6'6" beast and it's like, yeah.
Yeah, but you're still either going to win, lose, or be craven.
Yeah.
Like once you're in this, that's it. That's a limited kind of...
Can you be John Craven? in the posting country file.
That he's just on a very, very long custodial sentence.
You know what, that really changes how I've always thought it's a beautiful name, Craven. But now that you know what it means, you're like, oh, John.
Yeah. I am John the Vanquished.
Well, at least your ancestors mated with someone, you know?
Yeah.
Like someone else to be with.
Yeah, he comes from a long line of people who were shit at trial by combat.
Yeah.
But then
Well, no, because
Well, no, survived. Not a long line. Yeah, I was going to say, like, one or two. Yeah.
One or two got away with it. But trial by combat is only the second stupidest thing I found.
Oh.
Because there's also trial by ordeal.
Oh, yeah.
So the 6th century historian Gregory of Tours writes about St. Hyacinth. I think he's called St. Hyacinth the Detested.
St. Hyacinth?
Yeah.
Is this a male or a female?
It's a male.
Hyacinth,
yeah.
The Detested.
The Detested, who will be played in the film version by Patricia
Rowe. John Craven.
And
Patricia Ratledge being his disapproving mother.
Yeah.
Can I just say his defense is, you know, I was called Hyacinth as a child. I think that's
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's his defense.
And I was touched up by the Loch Ness monster. St. Hyacinth, his trial, he had to stick his hand inside a boiling pot of oil to pick out a stone, and if he could do that and survive, then he wasn't guilty. And he did it, and he survived, but he boiled the skin off his arm up to the elbow.
Oh Christ!
Next up, in
I hope he used his left hand.
That would have been clever. Yeah. And then later on, if he's having a cheeky little strangle wank, it'll feel like it's a skeleton doing it.
Is somebody else, yeah. Brings a whole new meaning to the word boner.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where it came from.
Maybe.
Came from St. Hyacinth's strangle wanks.
Yeah, the patron saint of strangle wanks.
Yeah. Problem is, when St. Hyacinth ejaculates, it's just magician's flowers pop out the end of his cock.
Ta-da!
I would like that sound when I ejaculate that. Ta-da! Savonarola.
He of the Bonfire of the Vanities.
Yep. Well, the reason why it's called Bonfire of the Vanities, I think, 1498, he said he had these apocalyptic, prophetic visions. And the Catholic authorities in Spain went, yeah, pull the other one, mate. And he went, no, it's true. I'll have a trial by fire. Now, I survived the trial by fire. Then I am a prophet of God. They promptly lit the flames. There was an immediate downpour of rain. And the authorities just went, sorry, mate, God is not on your side. We're going to kill you.
Wow.
Wait a minute. Wait, let me get this straight. So they tried to burn him to death.
Yep.
God went, you do not burn my emissary.
No, no, they didn't try to burn him to death. He said, I would like a trial by fire, and if I survive this trial by fire, clearly my prophetic visions are true. As soon as they lit the fire, there was a downpour of rain.
Proving his propheticism. Is that a word? Right?
Sure.
And then they went, no, okay, this type of thing is on my list too.
Yeah, it's not like the Spanish Inquisition are renowned for their moral integrity.
I will say he was Italian and it was in Florence.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Facts.
the rest of the stuff completely true.
Yeah.
But that story exactly is one of the two. Not my worst, but one of the two I had is that's what happened to Jesus.
Oh well, is that going to be your suggestion?
That's not my top suggestion. No, I'm keeping that close to my chest.
Good. Well, for my suggestion, we are going even further afield. We're going to Madagascar.
Capital of Madagascar is Antananarivo.
Yes, it is. Very good.
That's my one Madagascar fact.
Well, while we're on ridiculous...
I only know about the singing penguins.
Singing penguins?
Singing penguin. Let's go down...
Oh, wait, that's a film.
Yeah, it was a Dennis Potter musical, wasn't it? Hey there, Pingu, I've come to rub lube on your penis.
John Hurt.
sorry, that one? Yeah, it is. Sorry, if you've not seen The Sinning Detective, that doesn't make any sense what I just said.
No, no.
Briefly tell me about the singing penguins of Madagascar.
It's the fucking film Madagascar, Ben.
Oh fuck! I thought that was a real thing.
Wow, you're on an even bigger delay than I am.
Yeah, I was on Madagascar time. It took a while to get in there. So since you mentioned Antananarivo, what are we talking about? Antananarivo, which is where Madagascan Batman lives. we're going to talk about a peculiar part of the Madagascan legal code that we think was put in place by Queen Ranavola. Was most used by Queen Ranavola I in the 19th century. Her full name was Queen Rabo do Andriana Ampoina Marina.
Bless you.
Thank you. What it was, it involved a poison called Tangena, which came from a tree called the Cerbera mangahas. And basically, this was an extraordinarily poisonous tree that was also known as the suicide apple. And what you had to do in your trial by... It was known as trial by ingestion. And if you were accused of a crime, the three main crimes this was used for was the crime of theft, the crime of witchcraft, or the crime of being a Christian.
In Madagascar?
In Madagascar, yeah.
No, Christianity got everywhere.
Not well. Madagascar, they
tried to rebuff it. Though.
They tried to rebuff it a lot, and particularly in the 19th century, they worked really hard to rebuff the imperial forces of particularly France. Mm. The French and the Dutch, and obviously the British, were in there. But she was... I equate her to, like, the current ruler of Rwanda, who is... frankly, worryingly despotic, but a lot of the stuff he put in place, particularly sort of 10 years ago now, was trying to actively stop the divisions that led to the genocide in Rwanda.
Right.
So the current president of Rwanda is a dick, but sort of within reason.
Yeah.
But now it's got out of hand. Similarly, this queen was a dick, but there's been a lot of revisionist history that said she was doing it to protect her country, and particularly the central mountainous kingdom part of Madagascar, which is now the sort of the bureaucratic and administrative centre. Mm. And she was doing that to strengthen that,
right,
and protect it from imperial invasion. However, what she used a lot was this test. What you'd have to do is you would eat the poisoned nut, you would then eat three slices of chicken skin. If you vomited up the three slices of chicken skin, then you were innocent. If you didn't, or you died, then you were dead. Then you were dead. Then you were guilty.
Well, you were dead.
Yeah, and you were also dead. It's sort of like the witchcraft trial. Yeah. She actually adapted what the trial was, because it used to be when
that's
it was
better than the witchcraft trial, because in the witchcraft trials, if you die, you're innocent, and she's saying if you throw it up, you're innocent.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So that's usually the catch 22 of these things.
Did they have to put your
impossible survivable thing?
Did they put your fingers into a finger trap to stop you just, you know, sticking them down your throat?
No, oh god, they should have done. Well, originally, what it used to be is that when it first arose around the 16th century, you would feed the poison to your second, you could nominate, and the second would often be a rooster, and after you used your rooster, it would be a dog.
What?
And if you're
and then there'd be an old lady, and then a fly.
Yeah. But she put in place it had to be you rather than a rooster. Now, this particular type of poison had a or this particular type of trial, they estimate had a 20-50% death rate. In the 1820s, it killed about 1,000 Madagascans a year.
Doing really good stuff at preserving the Madagascan culture, right then.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, but what's the... So you have no defence, though. There's no legal defence. Literally, they've accused you of a crime, and do a Russian roulette with poison.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's it.
This is why I think it's a terrible legal defence, because this is, instead of going, I'm going to do a rational legal defence, we're going to do a trial by, in this case, ingestion. And the legal defence is your body's immune system's ability to fight against this.
Poison.
And clearly it didn't work. From 1828 to 1861, an average of 3,000 Madagascans per year died, including in 1838 a high point of 100,000 Madagascans.
Okay, but hang on, let's just be clear. What we don't have is the data on how many of those 3,000 were actually guilty. If 100% of them are guilty, you go, that is amazing.
Yeah.
That is an amazing system.
That's an incredibly good point. But I've
spoken like a true with 3 or 4 degrees.
Yeah, well, you know. So, because I've been through a lot of, this is how you are an expert witness in court, and it's hard. It's really hard, because you have to just stick to the facts, and you're not allowed to testify. You're just supposed to say, these are the facts, and you know, you can't say this indicates, you have to say this suggests, or this is this is in line with.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Yes,
consistent. There we go. This is consistent with. So all you need is one super criminal who is immune to that poison.
Oh.
The whole system is fucked.
The antidote. So there was a
that's
big
their
black
name. The antidote is coming. Oh no, tell the Antiriva, the antidote is coming.
Well, despite Rhea's protestations.
Sorry.
Feel free. You play hard. I like it. I'm going to suggest that this was the worst possible legal defence, because weirdly, the population sort of went along with it. And they were just like, no, we believe that this works, and we believe that we're happy to volunteer ourselves, even though people have estimated that in the 19th century, it was responsible for the death of about 2% of the Madagascan population.
Wow.
So this insane legal defense of the using the poison of the Tangenka tree is my suggestion for the world's worst legal defense.
Mm, very good. Trial by ingestion Tangenka tree.
Yeah.
So trial by poison. Immune system, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's trial by immune system.
It's trial by gag reflex. That's what it is.
So many gays live to live
by another day. Because it could, you know, the people that are getting off the most with that and getting away with it are the vegans that go, this chicken is making me ill. I brought two slightly more complex stories.
Go for it.
So the one that is my second place mm-hmm. is Jesus. Jesus just had, they took him to trial. They were desperate to put him on trial. It's that kind of thing. So he went first to the priests, and the priests were like, they kept finding witnesses to speak out against him, and nobody could, no one came up with the same story. So they just had all these charlatans coming in, telling stories, you know, like, oh, he was definitely drunk at that party. And then someone else would be like, no, I'm pretty sure we only had water at that party.
Little did they know.
Yeah, just going, oh, so that doesn't work. And then, and he wouldn't speak, and, you know, and they were like, don't speak at your trial, don't speak. And they asked him one question, it just went, are you the son of God? And he went, yeah. And they went, that's blasphemy. Finally, we got him on something. So they sent him over to the Roman courts because the priest can't kill. And they're like, we want him dead. So they sent him over to the Romans. But the problem is that the Romans are like, blasphemy is not really a crime for us. We have so many gods. Like, it's just, you know, you could say
at best it's slander.
Really. Yeah.
Can I say, by the way, Ireland has a blasphemy law on its books, which was introduced in the mid-noughties.
Wait a minute. You mean 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Against the church.
Yeah.
I'm sure I read something recently that they tried to.
We got a minister for justice who was a member of Opus Dei, who decided he'd introduce a blasphemy law in the early to mid noughties. So I think it's on the slate to be repealed in the next year or two.
It's got to be, because otherwise comedy is screwed in Ireland.
Yeah.
I mean, Dara Brian.
I mean, I don't think it's been enforced very much. But one of those things. You go, what? That's what you thought was important to do?
I'd love to see Dara go toe to toe with him in court.
Yeah.
Or just on Mock the Week.
Yeah,
that's why Dara's over here. He's a
fugitive.
He's a comedy fugitive exile. Yeah. Oh, man.
Dara O'Brien is the new Richard Kimball. Fleeing for a joke he didn't tell.
Yeah. Oh, that's harsh. And he's told so many. So they send him over to the Romans. And the Romans were like, that's not really a crime where we are. They're like, well, where are you from? He's like, I'm Galilean. So they said, well, Herod's in Jerusalem. Why don't you go? Herod can rule over this. So they sent him to Herod. And Herod went, I don't see what the problem is here. I don't really have an issue. So he sent him back to the Romans.
He sang that great song in Jesus Christ Superstar.
He was rather good, wasn't he?
That's the high point of that show.
He was there just going, where's my technicolored coat? they're going, wrong place. So they send him back to the Romans, right? And all this time is defense. So all he's been done for right now is blasphemy again in the priest's court. Mm-hmm. And he's been sent back and forth. And he went to Herod and he went back to the Romans. And Pilate said, yeah, there's nothing wrong. I'm going to set you free. Okay? So you get to the end of the day. Basically, Jesus has gotten off. His lawyer, and then Pilate's like, yeah, so we'll let you, you know, like all the admin staff have gone home. So if you could just stay in prison one more night and we'll sort it out in the morning. And his lawyer should have gone, no, he's free. He should come now. He'll come with us now. We'll come back. We promise we'll come back and sign the papers. Like, if we leave, we'll leave our passports. We'll come back. We'll sign in the morning. We'll leave you a rooster, whatever. And the lawyers were like, oh yeah, we got him off. This is cool. He can stay one more night. And then the next day was the day, the one day a year where the Romans go, hey, folks that keep rising up against the Romans, you get one day a year to pick a criminal that you can have back.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't matter what crime they've caused, you get to have them back. And that was
Judea's
the next day.
Version of the purge.
Kind of thing. You know, it's like
one night a year.
Weird kind of Big Brother thing where you go, you get to send them back into the house.
Yeah.
Right? So the next day where Jesus is supposed to just be signing papers and getting his shit back and going off on his way, Pilate's like, okay, so you get to pick a criminal. You can have Jesus, who's already been found innocent, or Barbarus, who keeps killing people every time the people rise up against the Romans. Barbarus is like, kill Romans, right? And so the Romans are like, well, who do you want back? And the people go, Barbarous, please.
Yeah, the so he gives Barbarous like
back. And the lawyers are just sitting there at the back going, no, that's fine, it's fine. He's been found innocent. This is all good. And we're going, this is not good. This is not good because the Romans are going, whoever you don't take, I'm going to kill. And no, and that is how Jesus got put on a cross.
Yeah.
Because the people chose Barbarous. And I'm going, that is the shittest legal defense. Like, going, hello?
Yeah.
Hello, you should have said something. You should have gotten him out the day before. Like, you should have gotten him out of priest court. When the priests went, that's blasphemy, but we can't kill you. They would have gone, oh, so sorry,
but,
bye.
But like, is it the shittest legal defense? Because if Jesus had got off, then he wouldn't have died on the cross for our sins.
In a way, Jesus got what exactly have you done what he wanted.
That is so bad that you needed Jesus to do that, O Jew, at this table.
I stole a finger of fudge at the age of 8, as I said, and I felt very guilty about it.
Well, you're going to hell.
Yeah.
There's the paintings of the Stations of the Cross in a lot of, or like representations of the Stations of the Cross in a lot of Catholic churches, sort of showing Jesus'
12,
version.
Right? With the 12 stages.
From, yeah, from makes Catholic sentenced Monopoly by, very difficult to play.
From him being sentenced by Pilate to the being taken down for the cross. And in the school where I went to, the church in the school, a rector hired this artist to paint these very nice depictions of the stations the whole way around the church. And apparently the rector was a bit of a dick to the artist the whole way around. So apparently the face of Jesus is quite like the artist's and the face of Pontius Pilate is quite like the rector's.
Nice.
That's beautiful. You know what I like about those 12 stages is that it's only a cross in the last four. In the first seven, it's like a circle, and then it's just a plank of wood, and then it's a tree. Yeah,
slowly being
took
made
them
up.
A while. Took them a while to get it right. And then finally they're like, oh, this works. So
I'd love to do that improv game where there's no minor characters in that story. Mm-hmm. So as soon as Barabbas gets left off, you leave the Jesus story and go, okay, what does Barabbas do?
Yeah, what did happen to Barabbas?
Probably killed more people.
Yeah, he probably killed more Romans.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to look that up for our next episode. I want to know about Barabbas. That like I feel like that is a nice companion piece to the Passion of the Christ. Just like
it would be interesting.
Yeah. It would be. Yeah, it would be. But like, have Barabbas as some sort of ancient Judean mobster. Like
it could be the more popular. It could be like Frasier, you know, like a really popular.
Jesus, the life of Jesus is Cheers.
You know, because Jesus has had a natural ending, didn't he?
Yeah, and then
oh my God, they killed Jesus! Don't worry, he comes back. But
that's
not
South
for
Park,
long.
Isn't it?
Not for long.
Oh my God, they killed Jesus!
Yeah, and then Pontius Pilate is just a bit like Joey.
Yeah.
Well, of course, they made the Pontius Pilate, and then they didn't make the rest of the series.
But he's called Conscious Pilate. But no, that's not my best one. That's pretty shitty. But the worst legal defense, I think, is the one that got Al Capone put away.
Ah.
Now, Al Capone is your classic, you know, 1930s gangster in Chicago, okay? Mm-hmm. Nasty guy, moves from New York to Chicago, works his way up the ranks. So he starts off as a bodyguard. While he's a bodyguard at a brothel, contracts syphilis, which he decides never to get treated, even though they could treat it at that time, right? And, you know, so he works his way up, and there's gang warfare, and eventually they're owning all of the politicians in a particular sector, so he's living in that. And he's running, you know, it's still in the time of the non-alcohol prohibition. So they're selling alcohol to all of the bars, and if you don't buy from them, they basically blow up your bar. He's killing rival gangs. Like, he's a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he's really, really careful with money. So even though he's obviously making a lot of money, he never puts any property in his name. He doesn't have a bank account. He only ever uses Western Union to transfer money, and never more than $1,000 at a time. Like, you cannot find... You know, he was so careful with his finances. Now, obviously, the government wants to get him on murder, but it's so corrupt in Chicago. They're really struggling. They want him put away. They want him done. So they decide to... So they decide that they're going to try and go at him a different way. Now, in 1927, they decided that you cannot use the Fifth Amendment, the right to silence, to defend yourself against illegal gains. So they said that if you're making illegal money, you still need to be taxed on it.
Oh.
So essentially, IRS is king, mm-hmm. All right? So because they used to say, well, no, I can't admit to illegal gains because that's my right and it incriminates me. And they're going, nah, not an incrimination. So if you're making money illegally or otherwise, we have the right to tax it. That's the rule. That's the law. And then off the back of that, his brother, Al Capone, got done on tax evasion. So essentially they went, look at all that money you're making, you're not paying
tax.
Hang on,
his brother Al Capone?
Al Capone's brother.
Yeah. I thought Al Capone's brother was also called Al Capone.
It's like the George Foreman situation, where all the children are George Foreman.
Are they?
Yeah, did you not know that? George Foreman, all his kids are George Foreman.
Including the girls?
I think he's got six sons.
Georgia?
Georgia
Foreman. I think he's got six sons, and then there's like the grill.
who's the baby of the family and feels really left out.
Yeah. That's also how George Foreman dispenses justice in his family, trial by grill.
Remarkably healthy way of
trying someone.
The guilt just fries off.
You collect it in a little train and throw it away after. That's our guilt bucket.
Yeah.
His brother. So his brother got done for tax evasion and got put in jail. And that's where Al, they're constantly calling him up on stuff. And he's been called up on vagrancy and he's been called up on all these little charges, but they want to get him big time. So he says to his lawyers, sort this out. Mm-hmm. Legitimize me. I don't want to be done for tax like my brother. Right. So they start to try and negotiate with the government, and it doesn't work. I won't tell you what they did, but they're starting to try and negotiate and get a deal, and it doesn't work, and he ends up going to trial. Now, the judge sitting on his trial has known the whole time and is keen to put Al away, right? And he already presided over the brother's trial, so he knows the whole deal. So actually, Al Capone goes in and has made a deal with the U.S. attorney to admit, okay, I cop it, I didn't do some stuff, I'll pay you some money, I'll go to jail for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And the judge goes, no, you don't get to do that. We are taking this to trial. And it goes to trial, and they bring out evidence after evidence after evidence of all of the spending that he's done. But spending is not earning. They still haven't proved his income.
Where it's coming from.
Where it's coming from to be able to tax it. And that is where the judge goes, oh, hang on. Didn't you try and negotiate? Your lawyers tried to negotiate a deal for you. And they went, yeah. And in that negotiation, the lawyers wrote down how much money you're willing to admit that you earned over the past X number of years. Whoa. So the lawyers had basically gone, we need a deal for our client. They went, right? Okay, we need to legitimize his income. So he made 100 grand in this year. He made 150 that year. So essentially, his lawyers screwed him over.
Like giving the receipts
by giving,
to everyone.
Essentially going... We have a signed affidavit of what Al Capone is willing to admit that he earns in order to try and make a deal. And then that deal didn't work. Then it went to trial. Then they tried to get another deal. And that didn't work because the judge went, oh, what, there's his income. There it is there. And they went, oh, no, but lawyers can't confess. He didn't confess. We wrote that. And they went, doesn't matter. You wrote it on his behalf and you're his lawyer. And that's how he got done.
Is that admissible?
The judge said it's admissible.
Wow.
And they went, oh, statute of limitations. And he went, but you spent 5 years in Miami, so we're going to take that time off the statute because you were down there living at large on the beach and being accused of vagrancy. So actually, when you squeeze together the amount of time you've been working and functioning in Chicago, it is within the statute. So he got done that way. He got done by his own lawyers admitting his income, whereas if they just kept shtum, all they had was proof of spending.
That's amazing.
I posit that as the world's worst legal defense is where your own lawyers screw you over by trying to save you.
That fell in. Because obviously, I think it's pretty well known that he, you know, they couldn't get him for the crimes that he, the violent crimes he committed. He got done for tax.
He got done for tax evasion.
But that didn't have to happen.
No. He could have gotten off with that. And he killed so many people. Like he was so dirty in so many ways, but so careful.
That's beautiful poetic justice.
Yeah.
And then he went to jail for like 10, 11 years. And by the time he came out, he was so syphilitically insane.
He's useless to anybody.
Yeah. Well, they think he got protected in jail. There was a lot of rumors that he was protected in jail but he was already starting to go, he was already syphilitic and gonorrheic. Is that a word? Yeah. And then
I think it's a font.
Excellent. So, your candidate, Al Capone's incompetent team of lawyers. I looked at some Latin terms. So, like, all the stuff like sub judice and ex cathedra and habeas corpus and so on. Found some fun ones. Do you know what innuendo actually means? It's a legal term, because you can obviously... imply things by innuendo in court.
Innuendo.
You mean properly, not like...
Means.
I'm
if
sorry.
If you want a definition, guys, I'll give you one.
No, what? The way, Okay. I'm going to say it and then you're going to cut this out, but we are being asked by a gay guy what innuendo actually means.
Yeah, it's fine. Go on, say it. And then you can cut it out of me.
Cut it out of you?
Yeah. Holy Christ.
What shape do you think my thing is? What thing am I putting in you for you to cut it out? This is wrong. Cut this whole bit out. This is just disgusting.
It's anal sex.
It's something like punching an innuendo.
Look at you with the proper terms.
Innuendo means by nodding.
Oh.
So you're sort
of, it's a weird way of sticking
sort
it
of,
in.
Maybe sort of,
what's the root then? What are the roots of that?
So it's a Latin, I think it's a Latin, the yeah. Latin translation of the word is an innuere, I think, is to nod.
Okay.
And so not, sort of you're nodding towards something without actually saying it. That's by innuendo.
So innuendo literally means nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's your father?
Ferre nature.
How do you spell it?
F-E-R-A-E. And then nature, N-A-T-U-R-A-E.
Isn't that a type of hazelnut chocolate treat served by ambassadors?
Ferre, I would have said that ferric is iron.
No, it's to do with feral, actually. It's wild. Feral. So it's wild feral. Animals okay. by nature is what it literally means. And it's in property disputes. If people are disputing who owns sort of uninhabited property, it's a sort of a legal distinction that any wild animals on the property are not included in the case. It's just the property itself. They're wild by nature. They're not part of the whole package. And the fun, this one, this is my favourite one, Scandalum Magnatum. It means...
Wait, Scandala?
Scandalum.
Scandalum.
Yeah, which is fairly easy to figure out what it might mean.
Scandal. Yes. Mm-hmm. And Magnatum is by ice cream.
Big is sort of closer than ice cream, believe it or not.
My favourite ice cream you said earlier, in flagrante.
Flagrante delicto.
Delicto. Yeah. That's my favourite.
It's to do with sort of peers. It's to the defamation of peers or the aristocracy.
I'll call Piers a cunt whenever I want to.
Well, he is. On his
That's
Good Morning
such
Britain.
That's such an up yourself legal term.
It's not on the books anymore, but it used to be in the old days that there was a distinction between...
You have shamed our class.
Yeah, well, there used to be a distinction between sort of slander of the members of the general public and slandering the aristocracy themselves, which is considered a greater crime.
The ton.
Yeah. I also looked up some weird laws that are still on the books in Britain. I felt like one of us should. I found this in an article in The Independent from 2016. A guy called Christopher Sargent did a PhD in Cambridge on these sort of archaic laws.
I wish to read that.
Yeah, well, here's some. Do you know what should happen to all beached whales and sturgeons in the UK?
They're divided up to the local butchers for sale, fairly.
No.
They are property of Prince Charles.
They are property of the monarch, or you should offer them to the monarch. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, it goes very well. Charles, why did you go Charles?
Prince
on that?
Wales, mate.
Oh, yeah. Nice one.
That was, very good.
Oh, and also, whales
and
sturgeon have a taste profile that really matches swan.
Yeah.
Really?
No!
Oh!
I think that's my favourite thing I've ever made someone gullible about.
Incredulous about.
Yeah. That law dates from 1322, but apparently someone a few years ago caught a sturgeon or found a sturgeon and went and offered it to the Queen, and she said no, he was free to dispose of it as he liked. Then he got into trouble because you're not meant to catch sturgeon because they're an endangered species.
When you say he offered it to the Queen, do you mean he was stood outside Buckingham Palace waving a sturgeon around? Liz, got a sturgeon for you.
Just laying a trail of caviar down the mall.
Well, is it a virgin? Then I don't want it.
No, it's a sturgeon.
No, caviar comes from a virgin sturgeon.
Oh, does it?
Caviar comes from a virgin sturgeon. A virgin sturgeon's a very rare fish. A virgin sturgeon needs no urgin. That's why caviar's a very rare dish.
Is that
proper
real?
Proper caviar comes from, literally virgin sturgeon.
Oh, I didn't realise that. Mm. Interesting. They have to be extracted by a surgeon, presumably. At the point at which they burgeon.
Yes.
With your olive oil, of course, has to be extra virgin.
Oh my gosh, I am in pain. You have no right to complain about the rhyming couplets of another conversation that also was not in the podcast.
Oh, I'm sorry, that podcast and this one are merging.
Oh!
Sorry, I don't need any encouraging.
Oh!
I'm so sorry. Under the Licensing Act of 1872, it's illegal to be drunk in a pub. Yeah. I think the responsibility falls on the innkeeper, the publican. They're meant to not allow people to be, kick them out.
They can't be too young, they can't be drunk.
Yeah.
Where's he making his money?
Oh, I read about that thing, that you can have the defense of mistake. Because ignorance is no defense under the law, but ignorance of the facts, ignorance of the law isn't allowed, but ignorance of the facts is allowed. So you can't know that, it's not a defense to say, oh, I didn't know it was illegal drinking age is whatever. But it is a defense to say they looked older and they had fake ID. So you can defend yourself and say, I made a mistake, duped. Rather than, duped. Yeah, I was duped. Yeah.
So I didn't know it was illegal to murder.
Yeah.
It's not okay.
I didn't know I was murdering at the time.
I was murdering him. To be fair, he had fake ID. and he looked more alive.
It's what turned him on. That's all he said. It's also another fishy one. From 1896, it's illegal to handle a salmon in suspicious circumstances.
Oh man, a lot of grizzlies went down for that.
Apparently that's some sort of poaching law, so there was some sort of, there was a lot of poaching in the 1890s apparently, and anyone who was caught with a salmon in suspicious circumstances is not like you're holding some smoked salmon in a
and that's actually where the job of salmon massager came about. People were like, no, I'm just massaging the salmon to help them grow.
And yeah, there was a big, Edwardian craze, the salmon massagers. Yeah. It's a surname in Buckinghamshire.
What the fuck are you talking about?
We're just making bullshit up, mate.
All right.
We've lured people
back
in.
Back at you.
We've lured people in with a fact.
Yeah.
And then sell them a fiction.
And then beat them over the head with a fiction. Yeah. You aren't really,
Here's a free fact. Sign up for our weekly fiction at $10.99 a month.
Like salmon. Like, it was salmon massager as a surname that got me. Yeah. Like, hello, I'm Jeffrey Salmon Massager. This is my wife Hyacinth.
It's actually
It's the lady salmon massager.
Which is
the dowager countess salmon massager.
I think the lady salmon massager is available at Ann Summers.
Weirdly, comes in a range of colours.
That's what she does. I'm sorry. These are some great ones. This is one of the most British laws I've ever seen. It's illegal to jump a queue at the tube ticket hall.
Oh, I'm totally using that one. Not that there's queues anymore.
So I think there's a grey line because now there's machines. That's, and I think, the Jubilee. Apply to the ticket windows. Yeah. I think it applied to the ticket windows when you were queuing to be served by an actual person, which is obviously not very much of. But yeah, don't have to just tut. You could prosecute. It's illegal to beat a carpet on a thoroughfare in the Metropolitan Police District.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
It's illegal to activate the alarm in your house and leave it without nominating a key holder who can get in and turn it off in case it goes off without you being there.
Isn't that kind of the whole point of an alarm system, is that nobody is there to turn it off you're gone?
If it goes off by accident, well, that's the thing, you've got to be able to trust your neighbours or something. That's from 2005.
That's very
un-British. There's got to be a distance on that, because I'm not going to nominate a key holder. If I'm going to work every day, I'm the key holder, because that's not far. It's if you go on holiday or something, you probably need a key holder.
That's a law from 2005. It's to do with sort of neighbourhood being sort of sociable and all that sort of stuff. And there must be a vendetta against slapstick comics, because there's also a law against carrying a plank along a pavement in the Metropolitan District. As well as presumably large panes of glass.
Over your shoulder. Surely you can drag it behind you. You just can't put it on your shoulder and then turn to talk to someone.
Yeah,
there should be
a law against distracting people carrying planks.
You're not allowed to carry a plank along a roadway and not know where you're going. Because it's the, where am I, that really screws people.
That's why the Chuckle Brothers have both got moustaches, because they're actually fugitives from the law and they're in disguise.
As the Mario Brothers.
Yes.
And my favourite one, when do you think this law dates from? No person shall import into England potatoes which he knows or has reasonable cause to suspect
are Irish.
From Poland.
Poland!
Polish
potatoes. I'm going to say, when did the Poles join the EU?
2004.
I'm going to say 2003.
Okay.
It's about then. It's the early 2000s. Because there was an... This isn't a Brexity law. There was an outbreak of some sort of disease among potatoes in Poland, so to protect British potatoes. I think the law... But the law is still in place 15 years later.
Do you know what's still in place? Is you can legally shoot a Welshman from the tower of the Hereford... either church or cathedral. I can't remember which it is. Wow. As long as they are... It's at midnight and they are approaching you from the Welsh border. with a longbow. Sorry, a lot of caveats, but there is a loophole there. If you are Welsh, do not walk into Hereford at midnight from Wales.
From the Welsh border.
From the Welsh side, if you can
go the long way around and come
the silhouette of a longbow at the top of the...
That's one of the... I love those loopholes. There's my college where I went to in Dublin, Trinity College Dublin, there's long been this story that a student in the exam hall decided to call upon his right to demand a goblet of alcohol during his exam. Instead of bringing him his wine, they said, "We'll bring you your wine as soon as you pay the fine for not wearing your sword."
Well played.
Nicely done.
They clearly had it up their sleeve.
At which point he whipped out his pen and said, "I think you'll find this is my tier."
I found a couple of those sort of interesting and weird defenses of things. I read the story of Helen Spechalski. I read the story of Heather Spechalski, who was in Connecticut in 1999. She had to prove that she wasn't behind the wheel of a car during a fatal car crash.
Ooh.
And she said that she couldn't have been driving the car because she was blowing the driver at the time.
Great.
And her lawyers managed to prove that the trousers of the driver were loose at the time. And she was acquitted.
How did you prove that they were loose at the time?
Through strong oral arguments.
Also, I thought women could multitask, so that's really not...
Yes, but you see, she said she was blowing the driver. If she just said, "I was blowing the other person in the car," she could still have been driving.
Yeah.
But by the fact that she was blowing the driver, that put him in the driver's
seat. If she'd been blowing the passenger while driving, she'd have been being negligent.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. John Hinckley, the guy who tried to assassinate Ronald Reagan.
Uh-huh.
Do you know why he said he tried to do it?
The aliens told him to?
Nearly that crazy.
Jodie Foster told him to?
Jodie Foster. He's a massive fan of Jodie Foster. Yeah. He'd watched Taxi Driver over and about 15 times, apparently, and really identified with... Is it Travis Bickle, is Robert De Niro's character? And obviously Jodie Foster's in the film as well, and he became obsessed with her, and he wanted to get her attention. And then... I think he got more than Jodie's attention.
Jodie rather politically vocal at that time?
No, she was really young still.
Yeah. The early 80s, yeah.
Okay.
Because she's much more political now. There's a really great Nerdist interview with her where I think she touches on it, and it was just like, do you know what? Ignore all the other stuff I went through in my life, both professionally and personally. That's going to fuck you up.
Yeah.
If someone tries to kill the president because of you and there is nothing rational about it, regardless of the fact that you're a public figure, just as a human, that's going to mess with your head.
But I think that's almost, better than if you had been, if you had been particularly vocal. Like Lily Allen has been, isn't she very pro-Corbyn? She's very pro-Labour, isn't she?
Yeah, she's very pro-Labour and anti-Brexit and anti-Tory government and all that jazz.
So if somebody said, "Hey, I've killed, XYZ, I've killed the, David Davis for you because you're anti-Brexit," that's more of a mess. That's like you going, hang on a sec.
Yeah.
That, rather than he just went, "I'm trying to kill someone for you."
Great John Hinckley impression.
Thank you.
Didn't realise he was deaf.
I worked hard on that. It was a very loud bang. I don't know why I keep trying to mitigate these things.
Yeah,
you're just doing poor legal defenses.
I thought that was pretty good legal defense. Thank you very much.
Do you remember the story of Ethan Couch?
No.
So he was in 2013 in Texas. He injured 11 people and killed 4 in a drink driving case.
Oh.
And he had quite wealthy parents, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And he hired a legal team who argued that he suffered from affluenza.
Oh, yes, affluenza.
Yeah.
Oh, what year was that?
2013.
He was the one in California, right?
Texas, this story.
Oh, okay, because there was somebody... Oh, so that might have been the original, because recently there was another affluenza case, I think, in California.
Yeah, I think they've used it a couple more times since.
Oh, I give you this. It's the defense that you are so rich and you've grown up so privileged that you live in a bubble.
Mm.
That means that you don't appreciate
real life. So in other words, you can't handle what real life is. So the idea that you can't get drunk and drive your car, why can't I? I am so rich and I'm so super mega and I have, you know, daddy has a private jet. Like the concept of living life as a normal human being, following the rules that everyone else follows, is foreign to you as a product of your upbringing.
Can we impeach Trump on the case of affluenza?
That'll be his number one defense straight off the bat. I didn't realize the consequences of my action when I nuked that country.
But he will be too humble to actually bring it up. So. Yeah.
Originally, it seems like, because affluenza is a term, I didn't realize that affluenza was such an old term. It'd been used since the 60s, and it was more to do with people being sad about consumerism and not having the money to buy stuff that other people have. So it's now it's changed in its meaning.
They've appropriated that too, have they? Can't even have our own poverty mental issues.
Yeah. He got 10 years probation originally. It turns out last year he was sentenced to 720 days in jail, so for his crime, and he killed and injured loads of people, stole beer, he had 7 passengers in his dad's stolen Ford F-350. He was speeding at 70 miles an hour in a 40 zone. He had 3 times the legal limit of alcohol in Valium, and he got 2 years. Yeah.
Well, like I said at the beginning, how do you kill people? He's killed 4 people in a vehicle and has gotten 2 years.
Yeah.
It's really depressing.
Yeah. Kill people in a car and be rich.
Yeah. It's the new hipster version of man flu, though. I've got a really bad case of affluenza. I really need a day in some Egyptian cotton.
The help wanted a day off. Yeah.
He was going to be my choice, and then I read the story of Kayson Wilkins. This is fucking brilliant.
How do you spell Kayson?
K-E-I-S-O-N. It's like Kieran, like someone's misspelled it on the birth certificate or something.
Kayson.
There is an accompanying video to this, which we'll post when this goes out.
Okay.
And I'll show it to you guys in a second. Kayson Williams in Dayton, Ohio. He decided to defend himself in a case in July 2008. It had worked before. He defended himself successfully in 2005. He'd gotten off in a felony charge. And this was another case where he was up for felonious assault, some firearms charge, discharging a gun in a crowded area and things like that. And his tactic was basically trying to get a mistrial. He was just constantly engaging in antics to try and get... that was what the article said, and I can just imagine, you know, doing balloon animals and juggling banana peels. But basically trying to be generally disruptive. And it culminated in him, while cross-examining a witness, clutching at his heart and collapsing to the floor to gasps from the assembled police and witnesses and the judge and everyone.
Yeah.
Then sort of the video cuts forward a few minutes where he's being propped up in his chair and the judge is basically narrating what's happened. He said, so he's been examined by you. You've determined there's nothing wrong with him. That's correct, Your Honor. He's been examined by you. You've been examined by trained cops who are first aiders. Nothing wrong with him. Nothing wrong with being examined by a medical profession. Nothing wrong with him. And at one point the judge asks, does he appear to be doing anything other than sitting in that chair? No, Your Honor. But for 40 minutes, he's just playing out this heart attack act until a cop comes up to him, waves some smelling salts under his nose, and he jerks awake, obviously, because someone's waving smelling salt, and then glares at the cop, and then tries to keep it going by pretending like he's just gone glassy-eyed while he's clearly giving the cop this, like, stink eye for ruining his whole act.
Oh, God, he's like the Carlos Kaiser of legal defences, isn't he?
When he smells the smelling salts, the judge goes, oh, a remarkable change.
Love a pithy judge.
This worked the first time, though?
No, this wasn't what he'd done. This is the second time around. Clearly wasn't going as well. He just went, fuck it, I'm going to pretend I'm dying to try and get out of here and, like, have the whole trial suspended. And instead, the judge talks at him for the last couple of minutes of the video where he's just still doing this whole slumped in the chair, glassy-eyed thing, going, we're going to be back in 5-minute break while you can read. Are you finished cross-examining this witness? I'm going to take your silence as a yes. You may step down. We'll be back in 5 minutes. See you soon, Mr. Wilkins. The judge is so badass and cool. So, yes, my choice is going to be Kayson Wilkins for his fake heart attack in Ohio in 2008. So, our candidates for the world's worst legal defense are Ben's suggestion of trial by ingestion in Madagascar by eating the Tangenka tree seed. Rhea's suggestion of Al Capone's incompetent team of lawyers who basically handed the prosecution all that they needed. And my suggestion of Kayson Wilkins, the heart attack actor. I think because of... Sometimes you go, okay, that's interesting. That's it. Sometimes you want an iconic winner. And Al Capone is one of those icons. He's famous all over the world as like a massive gangster. And to be taken down in exactly that way. Everyone sort of knows, a lot of people know the thing, oh, he's taken down for his taxes rather than hit for his gangster crimes. That extra little detail has just made me love that story so much more. The fact that he just sort of turned around and whacked the ball into his own net from the halfway line.
Pretty much.
So I'm going to choose Al Capone's legal team as the world's worst legal defense.
You did say you were coming to us with an absolute humdinger.
Yeah, that is a king. I mean, I thought our suggestions were great, but that's just because of...
It's just on top of everything else, isn't it? Because he was so careful, never had a bank account. It was untraceable.
Yeah.
Mm. His income was untraceable, and therefore... that case was winnable.
And then he gave them tracing paper.
Yeah. I almost felt like one of the lawyers just did a classic, sorry, boss.
Oh, Muggsy. But before we go...
I'll dig the grave.
Before we go, I've got some of the worst news of the week, and this comes from an interview with a lady called Janet Mann of Georgetown University in The New Scientist, and she has discovered that female bottleneck dolphins... can reject some males and can control paternity using flaps in their vaginas.
When
this is a new study
that
they carried out by molding cetaceans' vaginas and then getting some cetaceous penises, inflating the penises to make them erect, and just seeing how they fit together. So doing, you know, balloon animals and seeing what they could fit into in the lab.
Dolphin NCT.
So, yeah. dolphins, if a female decides, because dolphins tend to sort of mate in, the males bunch together in threes or fours, and they get one female and they all take a go on her. And if she decides that, I don't want
so
you to be the father of my
raper?
Child.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Dolphins are awful.
Yeah, dolphins are a bit rapey. But if she decides, I don't want you to be the parent, she has the last laugh by going, yeah, sure, I'm going to carry your child. Little does he know that
but
the flaps are closed.
But he looks like me. They all look like you.
bad news for male dolphins.
That's some great science.
Yeah, good science. But good news for dolphin feminists.
Yeah, exactly.
Well.
Still the right thing.
What they need to be able to do is to formulate pepper spray out of their blowhole.
That'd be good.
I have to say, if given the choice between, you know, gang rape and deciding paternity, which are rights that we as humans have,
yes.
I have the right not to be gang raped, and I have the right to choose the father of my children. I think that, I wouldn't go for, do you want a flap in your vagina? No, I'm all right. There's enough flaps down there as it is.
Let's hope it doesn't get that far.
Right. That's not the only animal I know that can determine paternity as well. There are other animals that can just sort of go, well, you can have a go, but,
Yeah, I think ducks.
Ducks have got loads of, they have a labyrinthine vagina, and as it's been explained to me, if they want to make the sperm go to a false vagina, they put down like a feathery portcullis.
Yeah, they're a point system. They can divert you one way onto one rail or the other.
Oh, I thought you meant
like
a point system country. Like the Australian immigration system. Just like, just this, no, this duck sperm doesn't feel like it's going to turn into a high court lawyer. No.
Before we go, Rhea, where can people find out more about you and what you're doing?
I am all over the internet. Like, not behind, like, credit card gates. That sounds wrong. Like just search Rhea Lina.
RIALINA.
Yes, RIALINA, and then I'm on like the sensible social medias. I'm
good.
Not on Snapchat because I don't see the point in putting that much work into something that you want to see for it to disappear 10 seconds later. I'm not, that's not my art. And then I have a website, but you know, the website, just go to the Facebooks and the YouTube. Go to YouTube.
Do. Meanwhile, I haven't written a funny outro for the show, but I feel like I have a stinging pain in my left arm, guys. Oh no. Oof. Oh no. Oh, tune in next week on Worst Foot Forward to see if I live.
Barry McStay is sat in his seat. He seems to be absolutely fine. Rhea, fetch the smelling salts. Going down, Capone. Going down to Chinatown.
I mean, I don't think
all the gangster movies would be quite so popular if a lot of it involved, you know, lawyers poring over tax receipts. If it was just people in rooms filled with boxes and going, this thing from Pret. Do you think this was a working lunch, or was he just trying to get away with getting a free sandwich?
How about we don't record that thought and release it onto the internet? Otherwise, someone here is going to be paying a lot more tax.
Oh, God, I haven't even done mine yet this year. I will have by the time this goes out, I assume.
I've started working on mine and it's not fun to look at.
Your wife's a tax lawyer, though, so
yes,
you know.
But she will... She openly refuses to do my taxes because I have to learn.
I thought that's why you married her. As a business decision. thank you very much, Rhea, for doing the show. If you want to find out more about her, do check her out online, all the usual places, Twitters, and she has a website as well, I think.
Yes, she does.
We have a Twitter. We're on at Worst Foot. Did you know that, Ben?
I had no idea until you mentioned it right now, Barry.
Yeah, it's never come up before.
No, never does. Do you know what else has never come up before?
What?
Is the fact that if you enjoy this show and you think other people would enjoy it and you would like your friends to enjoy it, that you can rate us and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast host of choice.
Why have we not told people about
that? I don't know
before.
Why we haven't. It's really negligent.
Yeah.
You'd have thought if this was a proper podcast, then we would have banged on and on about it and our podcast listeners would have just done it.
Because presumably now we have done it, we're going to get like hundreds of them.
One would presume.
Yeah, that's definitely how this works.
Yeah. Hope you enjoyed your little slice of passive aggression this week, listeners.
Yes. And I do, as of course, look us up on Facebook as well and send us an email to worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Our guest next week. Oh my God, we had so much fun doing this podcast. It's an actor and comedian, Ethan Lawrence, who joins us to discuss the world's worst monarch. Both Ben and I being history graduates, we felt very much on home soil researching this. We've got Ming emperors. We've got hilarious nicknames for monarchs.
We've got the leader of the Bulgarian Peasants' Revolt. We've got a man who thought he was made of glass.
And we've got the Emperor of the United States. Genuinely, I may be one of my favourite podcasts to record so far. So tune in next week for a regal dose of Worst Foot Forward.